right application, there is still a very, very good and successful business around advertising within specialist markets. I think we'd all agree that the digital ad market at present is fairly challenging, and that you know, making your way in the traditional display sector is pretty tough. However, I think sharing some of our experiences and sharing the year-over-year growth that we've experienced in the London specialist part of our business, where we're growing digital advertising revenues at over 40% a year, shows that there is still an opportunity out there if you can calibrate your organisation in such a way to make a very good living from it. Right at the end, I'll just share a couple of case studies about how that's rolled out in action. So first of all, dealing with the formerly BBC Magazines bit, forgive me if I do spend 2 minutes at the front plugging the business a little bit just to share what Immediate Media is all about. Immediate Media was founded on, and I beg this indulgence because we've only been around since the 1st of November, Immediate Media brought three businesses together. So yes, it brought together BBC Magazines, which I think most people would agree is one of the, if not the best run magazine business within the UK. You know, we have the Radio Times, which still sells well over 900,000 copies a week, got approaching a quarter of a million subscribers, so it's still a very, very powerful magazine brand. But we also brought into the business Origin Publishing. Origin are one of the fastest growing specialist publishers based down in Bristol. And finally, we brought in Magicalia, which was a specialist publisher digital business with a technology platform that has outsourced clients, including Natmag Rodale, plus its own developed e-commerce platform. And we believe that by bringing those three businesses together, we were able to create you know, a really exciting media business that brought many different strands to the party. So from some entrepreneurial elements, along with this very well-established but tremendously valuable media asset that was BBC Magazines. So just a few stats there to pull through there. I think the two that really stand out for me is that we sell 2.5 magazines a second, 2.5 magazines a minute, and we also have 21 million unique users every month. And as the last ABCs, last week when they were released, we're now the third largest consumer magazine publisher in the UK. So just a little bit of market context around what's going on out there, and I'm going to focus the majority of my this session around the digital market. I think we all know, and I'm sure people in this room are well aware of this, that the digital advertising industry is absolutely exploding. There is an exponential growth of available places for marketeers to place their digital campaigns. You know, the chronology runs something like, you know, it started out that we were up against the rivals that we'd always been up against, traditional publishers or, you know, digital publishers who'd set up in the digital space. But as the market has evolved, there's a whole new breed of competitors. And I think when you dwell for a moment and think about the cost of entry into the digital space, it's pretty easy to see that the cost of entry, you know, where once rack space or serving, hosting bandwidth was incredibly expensive, it's now ridiculously cheap, so anyone can do it. So, you know, there was the explosion in the portals in the early days, the MSNs, the Yahoos, through to when people started publishing out of their bedrooms, putting Google AdSense on websites and making a living out of that, right through to the development of user-generated content sites. So really good examples would be things like Mums There, predominantly forum sites. You know, not to mention the last couple of years, the growth in content farms, people who are creating content simply around SEO terms to create affiliate revenues around them. And I haven't even touched on social media. You know, I think we all know that there's been a complete explosion in social media. You know, Facebook on their the IPO filing has got 854 million unique users, and there are 37.5 million active internet users in the UK at the present, and they spend more time than any other European country. So in a recent survey, 35.6 hours is the average amount of time that a UK internet user spends online, more than any other European country. So I think, you know, to conclude, where inventory inventory was once very, very scarce from a digital perspective. It now is completely, there is an oversupply of inventory. And I think, put bluntly, I'd say that the current market, if you're just carrying on a business-as-is basis, is completely unsustainable. Publishers who have relied on traditional display advertising models are finding themselves increasingly squeezed. You know, in a conversation last week with a trading director from one of the big West End agencies, they described it as the never-ending race to the bottom, and I wouldn't disagree. Now, how that plays out from a commercial perspective, I think, is that advertisers now are increasingly expecting to get significantly more reach for considerably less. And, you know, it's us as publishers who've allowed this to happen. You know, we've opened up our inventory to advertising networks. So, surprise, surprise, they can either buy it for a fraction of the cost over here through a network, or come and trade directly with you for 10 times the cost, where are they going to go? And so, you know, we're partly to blame, and the architect of our own downfall in this respect. But that glut in inventory is leading to significantly reduced CPM. So I'm not sure how many other people in this room were around in digital media sort of when it first got going, but I remember cost per thousands of around £30 being not unusual. You know, now on the ad networks, you're talking pence, maybe 10 pence and less. So there's, you know, to say that that is a sustainable market, I think, is absolutely not the case. You know, if they don't want more for less, they want more engagement, and they're coming up with a whole new set of metrics to measure us on. How many video views, how many clicks, and expecting more for reduced costs. And, you know, more recently there's been this very interesting development where they want to start to own the relationship with the consumers directly themselves. So a couple of examples for you from a market that we operate in the parenting sector. You know, by far away the biggest website in the parenting sector in the UK is this thing, Baby Centre. It's got over 2 million unique users, and it was funded by Johnson & Johnson. So, you know, they want to own that relationship and have a direct relationship with the consumer. There's loads of them. Nationwide have recently launched one around family finance for children. This is a Reckitt Benckiser example. So increasingly brands want to disintermediate us as publishers and start to have direct relationships. If you look at the ad market and the growth in the ad market, which everyone says is rosy, that's the growth, according to the IAB, of the online ad market between 2005 and 2010. And yeah, that looks really healthy growth. But actually, I think the most telling stat there is if you look at the display market at the bottom. The display market at the bottom has grown from 336 million to 945 over that period of time. The overall market grew from 1.4 to 4 billion. So the rate of growth in display is significantly behind the rate of growth in search or classifieds. Underneath that, I think it's an even more depressing picture, because in the last, the growth of the last year, much of that growth has been driven by social media advertising, i.e. Facebook, or actually automated platforms. So the stuff that us traditional publishers are relying on is really being squeezed. And when you look at, you know, many of you will have seen this before, this thing Luma Partners come up with, an American organisation. That's their view of what the online display ad economy looks like. I think that's pretty depressing. It shows that there's an awful lot of people who want to get a part of the pie in terms of the display advertising market. So there's trading desks, there's demand-side platforms, ad exchanges, advertising networks, retargeters, yield optimizers. That's an awful lot of people who want to share that take a share in the revenues, where once it was probably a one-to-one relationship, or if you were unlucky, there might be an ad agency involved. You know, there's an awful lot of people talking about automation and saying, for publishers, it's the knight in shining armour. You're going to start to see a significant improvement in yields as a result of advertising automation. I tend to disagree myself. If you take a recent study by e-consultancy that was done with Rubicon Project, 60% of publisher inventory is going to remnant networks. But for 30% of those publishers, the total revenues they're getting for that 60% is less than 10% of their overall revenue. So what you're finding is an awful lot of inventory is generating not a lot of revenue. But people are saying that the savers are real-time bidding or the ad exchanges, which will push up our yields. But in the same survey, as you can see there, 51% of people have experienced an improvement of yield of less than 10%. So that's 51% of people saying that they've seen less than 10%. So not a lot of not a lot, I would argue, is creating not a lot of improvement. And that you need to think elsewhere and have a fresh thinking. So put really simply, this is a very, very simplified chart of what the ad economy might look like. You've got performance, all that classified and search right at the bottom. You've got traded display in the middle, which is where the majority of publishers have stayed. Or you've got sponsorship and integration at the top. Which shamelessly have gone for that top piece and said, that's where we believe the value is. So our strategy has been that we believe that to be a successful brand-led cross-media publisher, you need to ensure that all the elements of your publishing operation are joined up. Technology is a key component, but editorial, advertising sales, advertising platform, marketing and design need to work really, really closely together to create a compelling experience for users and marketers. So what might that look like? First of all, I think you need to understand your market and you need to scope out your market opportunity. Where am I going to put my resources? You need to create a structure that allows you to exploit those market opportunities. So, technology platforms are really important, but it's really important to get all the parts of the business in right at the outset to contribute to that, to deliver success and collaborate around some shared goals. So from a technology platform perspective, how does that play out? I think we're very fortunate in the business that we've got the a technology platform that's part of the Magic Alien business. That is a fully owned, tightly integrated IP environment that we're able to stitch together. And it removes the need for costly external suppliers and lots of systems integration. And what we've done is really put that platform to work to try and be as effective as we possibly can. So a couple of examples of that would be that from a CMS perspective, we're just ruthlessly focused on making it easy for editors to use. So there's a really simple WYSIWYG editor that you just push publish on. I'm still amazed by the amount of people in scale publishing organisations that tell you they have to still put HTML code into CMS environments. I think also there's a real focus on the commercial thinking about where the output needs to be. So actually when you're architecting your website right at the outset, what are your commercial products that you want to sell? Whether they be paid content, whether they be sponsorships, whether they be advertising products. That's just broadly, we have a modular tech platform that stitches together. But moving on, content, content remains at the heart of everything. As a successful cross-media operation, you know, content remains at the heart of what we do. We generate an awful lot of content across multiple platforms, and deploying that as effectively as possible creates high-quality environments that both readers and advertisers want to be part of. And that, you know, all the changes that happened around the Panda algorithm last year from a Google perspective has made that only more important. Moving on to design, I think design is incredibly important and underlooked. You know, you want to create very, very compelling environments that people want to be a part of, whether it be from a UX perspective as a user, but critically an advertiser as well. You know, trying to take some of the learnings of great publishers like Vogue to create environments that people want to be seen in. We've also worked very, very hard within our business to create advertising solutions that are completely productized, but very exciting. So highly engaging, rich media stuff. Things that, you know, you'd expect to see on most websites, whether it be page peels or push downs or homepage takeovers, but we've built the templates in-house. So we can just offer them out to people, give us a few components. And it's a real subtlety around it. It's not a very, very difficult thing to do, but I think most people, most people don't understand that if you make it really easy, people will buy it. So a lot of traditional print advertisers, if you suddenly give them the alternative of an inside front cover and a homepage takeover, they suddenly start to get digital. It's also very, very important that that is backed up by an in-house sales team. You know, ideally, if you can afford not to, and we're fortunate on most of our products, we don't need to. If you don't have to send anything to Remnant, don't. Get your salespeople to sell it. They're the ones who understand the value of that audience. And make sure they're properly supported. So every significant brief that we get in, we send out a proper design, a proper response to it that has been pre-designed. So it's very powerful. I'd say of the briefs, of the RFPs we get through the door, we probably win 60 to 70% of them because they go back with some stunning designs with the client's own brand mocked up in that. So finally, just a couple of short case studies of how that has played out. Both of these, and I think this is where you start to see the value of where advertising can take you, and it's very much borrowed from a B2B environment, actually. It's around thought leadership and how you can provide thought leadership examples within a B2C environment. Both have been six-figure deals, so very, very material for the business. One was for Heinz on a parenting website called Made for Mums. They wanted to own the subject of weaning. They wanted thought leadership in the area of weaning. No one had the content, so we went away and built it and created a sponsorship environment for them. That now has been going for 2 years. We've just launched a new initiative with them, which is to do some emails around weaning that are going out to people with children of an appropriate age at the right time. And the results have been really stunning. So we're not talking massive numbers here, but what you're talking about is incredibly high levels of engagement. So people are prepared to invest significantly to get this kind of level of engagement. So a couple of stats just to put out on that slide. You can see the charts at the bottom there. Purchasing intention from Heinz rose from 27% to 49% within people who've been exposed to that feeding channel. There's a 22.5% open rate on these specialised emails. So there's a real opportunity to engage at a very high level if you get it right.
What's open rate?
So when they've received it, they've actually opened it. So most emails, you send them, but people don't open them. Well, yeah. An awful lot of emails that go out there get opened. And similarly, down in the White City business,